Hello, I'm Yasser Khan. Welcome to The Debrief. Now here's the situation. It's August 2017. A young woman, an Iranian refugee, 19 years old, starts filling out a feedback form. She's on an island in the South Pacific, in Nauru, which is a tiny country. The Australian government runs an offshore processing facility there for asylum seekers. The young woman writes, quote, "After 4 years of being locked up in detention center with mental torturing in such a hard situation, they still are not giving us any clear answer," end quote. We'll call her Maryam because we can't use her real name. That will put her in danger, and we'll tell you why in a minute.
"We are ready to die. We are giving you permission to put poison in our food, shoot us all to death, or kill us in any way. But make it quickly, because we are all already dead inside."
On The Debrief this week, we're trying to understand how a 19-year-old woman has come to sound so broken. But it's impossible to get inside the detention camp.
"The Australian government has a strict policy on refugees, holding them in what it calls processing centers. The offshore camps have been called Guantanamo Bay, Down Under. The camps are completely off limits to journalists, but news does trickle out."
So my colleague Hyojin Park had an idea. Hyojin, how did it all start?
"Well, I first saw Maryam's cry for help on a Facebook page called Free the Children. I managed to get in contact with her through people I found on social media who know her, and we started sending voice messages on our phones."
"How did you get to Nauru?"
"We left Iran 4 years ago because we got a warning from the Ministry of Intelligence of Iran. And also, we are Christian. And, it's not easy to be a Christian in Iran. I'm here with my family, my parents, and my brother. He's 3 years younger than me. It's just four of us. We were on the boat for 3 or 4 days, and then we got lost. There was 107 people. The boat broke down, and we were floating in the ocean. 5 people passed away, and we were floating in the water for hours. And it was one of the hardest memories. I was ready to give up, but we were rescued by Australian Navy a few hours later."
That's quite an arrival. Then Maryam and her family are rescued by the Australian Navy. They're probably relieved. You flee your country, you survive a shipwreck, hours of cold ocean water. You basically beat all odds, and you seek asylum and get refugee status. And you're finally safe. Or you think you're safe.
Maryam and her family were sent to Australia for a medical transfer for her father to receive treatment. And they were gone, I think, from the top of my head, I think they were gone for about 4 months. And then when they were returned to Nauru, I walked into the room and Maryam just collapsed in my arms. Like, she grabbed me and her legs gave way underneath her. She was telling me the story of how they were transferred back to Nauru.
That's Tracy Donahue, one of the social workers who eventually came to work with Maryam.
So what's the story that she just started to talk about?
Well, Maryam and her family were medically evacuated to Australia, and this is where she becomes aware of her situation, a refugee being treated like a convict.
"When we were transferred to Nauru, they took us to the plane. They didn't even let me have a hair tie to tie my hair up. And when I wanted to go to bathroom on the plane, two guards would follow me and they wouldn't let me close the door. They would stand right there, and I was just 16.
While she was doing this, her mother was also sobbing, and I looked over Maryam's shoulder to her father, and he was sitting there staring into space, just looked like a broken man. And his reaction, as much as Maryam's and another's, was just heartbreaking."
Wow.
Yeah, that really breaks her. It completely breaks her.
What is the point of surviving the sea if you are going to die slowly and painfully every day? I wished I was dead at the sea. I wished I would never survive it.
Refugees on boats have been trying to get to Australia for decades. But what is relatively more recent is offshore detention. It starts in 2001 with the so-called Tampa affair.
When the Tampa first sailed into Australian waters after rescuing more than 400 Muslim asylum seekers, no one could have predicted the dramatic sea change ahead. What could have been an international humanitarian issue instead became an Australian security crisis.
About a month after 9/11, a Norwegian freighter named Tampa rescues 433 people at sea, 140 kilometers away from Christmas Island. All of those people are Muslim. The Australian government, violating international law, refuses to let Tampa enter its waters. Listen to former Prime Minister John Howard explain why.
We will decide who comes to this country and the circumstances in which they come.
I don't want in Australia people who would throw their own children into the sea. I don't. There's something to me incompatible between somebody who claims to be a refugee and somebody who would throw their own child into the sea. It offends the natural instinct of protection.
Now, this becomes an international scandal, so the government comes up with an idea. All asylum seekers will be processed offshore. One of those offshore places is Nauru, where Mariam is right now. Over the next 12 years, some 1,100 people get asylum, but all that stops in 2013 with Prime Minister Kevin Rudd.
From now on, any asylum seeker who arrives in Australia by boat will have no chance of being settled in Australia as refugees. If they are found to be genuine refugees, they will be resettled in Papua New Guinea.
So, no more refugees. Australia pays Papua New Guinea $55 million to take them instead. The next year, Kevin Rudd signs a similar deal with Cambodia and gives them $71 million. Saying that it's fighting people smugglers and stopping deaths at sea, Australia completely closes itself off to the boat people.
We recognise that our border protection policy is tough. We recognise many would see it as harsh, but it has been proven to be the only way to stop those deaths at sea.
So Mariam hears Prime Minister Turnbull loud and clear, but she and her family are already there. And the question in her mind is, how is keeping them trapped on an island helping anything?
How long more should we be kept in here? I mean, how many of us should die until someone take action? How many of us should die? How many? Until the world realize that we are here.
She means this literally. Refugees and asylum seekers on Nauru die of disease and poor health care. Others die in riots. Some kill themselves. She describes an atmosphere of total deprivation.
The only time we had for shower was 2 minutes per day, per person. If 2 minutes was finished, then the water was shut off and you couldn't get them to turn it on again. And some families here have sneaked in some cooking facilities like pans, something that you can cook really small things with it. It's not allowed in the center, but we somehow did it. And then we have to try to sneak in ingredients inside so that we can cook something.
Yeah, that's right. Refugees are not allowed to bring food in. Camp rules. No smartphones with cameras. It's to stop them from sneaking out photos of the conditions in the camp. Put together, all these things, over several years, take on a whole different dimension.
People might think that, so what if you can't have a cell phone? So what if you can't cook something for yourself? But it's not just about that. It's not letting you live your life. It's making this place more like a hell than it already is.
So what do you do all day long?
I don't do much in the day. Maybe I'm in my bed and trying to sleep or trying to not think about anything.
At this point, you might be thinking, maybe, just maybe, some of Maryam's words are a little bit exaggerated. She clearly sounds desperate. Maybe I'd be too, after 4 years in detention, despite having refugee status. So I reach out to people on Nauru who are not refugees.
Hi, my name's Gabby Sutherland. I was the design and technology teacher with Save the Children on Nauru.
I start off by asking what conditions are like over there, since journalists can't access the camps.
The living conditions in the camp were unbelievable. They're abhorrent and they're just disgusting. They're absolutely a disgrace and shameful place that the Australian government provides for these innocent people who are just trying to seek asylum.
Gabby describes moldy tents, plywood floors that can't be properly cleaned. Ventilation inside these tents is terrible.
So it's one of the hottest places on earth. It is, the temperatures there are just so extreme. It's just incredibly hot. There's no safety, no privacy, and the space was just so small. So people crammed into these awful tents in this inhumane environment. It didn't take too long before I thought, I've got to speak out about this. This is just not acceptable. It's not. It's criminal. It's corrupt. It's just not what the government is saying that it is. Currently, we have gag orders that a 2-year jail sentence if we speak out. But I don't think anybody with a moral bone in their body can't speak out about the atrocities that are happening in that place.
Wait, what kind of atrocities are we talking about?
Well, the list is long. Here, listen to what Gabby says.
There's sexual abuse happening in Nauru. There's physical abuse happening in Nauru. People are demeaned and demoralized. There's false accusations being made. People have been convicted for walking around in groups of more than three. You know, for trying to have a voice, trying to speak up about 4 years in detention, 4 years of having to live in these awful conditions. And as soon as they do try and have a voice, they're thrown in jail for sometimes for months.
Now, remember we told you at the beginning that we can't tell you Maryam's real name? Well, you just heard why.
Yep.
But because people like her, Gabby, and others are speaking out, the UN said in 2015 that Australia is in breach of international anti-torture conventions. Then Prime Minister Tony Abbott fired back.
I really think Australians are sick of being lectured to by the United Nations, particularly given that we have stopped the boats.
Right.
And, well, things haven't changed since then.
I'm Peter Dutton, Australian Minister for Immigration and Border Protection. I want to make it very clear to all refugees and transferees in Nauru that you will not, under any circumstances, be settling in Australia.
We were instructed in the event of a fire that we would leave and leave the children behind. So I guess the pecking order of how they saw the importance of human beings, you know, they were pretty low on the rank of how the Australian Border Force viewed these people who are stuck on Nauru.
Throughout all this, Gabby's had an ongoing relationship with Maryam. She's known her for about 2 years now.
So I met her at the school and she was very conscientious and hardworking and very well-liked. And we had after-school cooking classes and she loved to come to the cooking classes and she rallied up all of the other kids to come so that they wouldn't lose the classes. And she was just really active and wanted to participate, wanted to contribute, wanted to make the most of her experience there.
Then something happens and things take a turn for the worse.
I actually personally thought we had lost her forever. I thought the dark place that she went to and the depression and the hopelessness that she felt and the loss of her dreams and her youth, I really felt that she had gone forever.
I did attempt suicide and I harmed myself. I'm just so tired of everything, and the only reason that keeps me from doing it is my family.
With Maryam, another teacher, Tracy Donahue, they would call each other and be in, I guess, in that more in-depth communication.
We heard from Tracy earlier when she told us about what happened to Mariam on the plane. I figured Tracy can help me understand what Mariam is going through, because by now, I'm getting worried about her.
She had terrible moments with her mental health. She's attempted self-harm quite a few times, and she's contacted me after those occasions. And like you say, events, I guess it's, they're constantly being asked by Mariam, like others, you know, when will this end? What's the point? Why don't they just kill us? And I don't have any answers. And so when she rings despairingly, there's a sense of futility that I feel, that there's nothing I can do, but there's also nothing I can say.
She thinks it all goes back to how Mariam was humiliated on that flight back to Nauru.
And when I wanted to go to bathroom on the plane, two guards would follow me and they wouldn't let me close the door. They would stand right there, and I was just 16.
It's not going to make a difference to them. Okay, they already know you're suffering. They already know other people have suffered. Other people have self-harmed, and it hasn't changed the situation, because that's a whole part of the system of deterrence. So what I'm trying to get across to her is that the only effect that self-harming would have would be to the detriment of her health and her family's.
As we document this story, we learn that Mariam is on a roller coaster ride. Sometimes she's a regular 19-year-old, smiling, interested in cooking classes and making jewelry. At other times, she goes into what her former teacher, Gabby, calls that dark place.
I always have a faith that if they do get out of there, then they will recover. But I don't know whether that's my own projection and my own hope that that will happen. I hope every day that she's not permanently broken, but she's definitely damaged, definitely damaged from that experience. And I think if not a lifetime, it will take her a long time to recover from that.
Mariam's story is far from over, and we plan to keep on it. It's easy to see it as a story of victimhood, but look at it another way, and it's the story of a survivor. Or as her friend Tracy Donahue puts it, it's a story of power.
Mariam's story is not extraordinary in the way that it also applies to everybody that's been sent to Nauru. So her story is not extraordinary in that way. What's extraordinary about her story is that she still has the will to tell it.
At The Debrief, we want to keep bringing you more stories like Mariam's. If you think you've got one, write to us at debrief@aljazeera.net. I'm Yasser Khan. Thanks for subscribing to our podcast and telling your friends about it. We're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or any other app you prefer to use. See you in a week's time.